I listened to the audiobook version of the memoir, which was read by the author with a gentle southern drawl who can write and tell what is called a good yarn.
I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City.
Maybe some voters voted for these candidates in spite of the fact that they're LGBTQ. Maybe other voters simply didn't care that the candidates were LGBTQ, which is even better.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Switzerland takes another slow step to marriage equality. Maupin's memoir matches his well-told tales, and election wins boost queer youth confidence. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2020. Switzerland is edging closer to marriage equality. The Parliament Senate narrowly approved a marriage equality bill on December 1st, voting 22 in favor and 15 against, with 7 abstentions. The Marriage for All measure had already passed in the House of Representatives. It now returns to the lower chamber to reconcile differences between the approved versions, especially the Senate's notable addition of a provision dealing with a child's right to know their ancestry. Swiss politics moves like clockwork, just slowly. Civil partnerships for queer people were created in 2007. The first bill to amend the civil code to open civil marriage to those couples was proposed in 2013. Even if the two houses of parliament resolve their differences on the current bill, a far-right Christian political party will fight. Leaders of the Federal Democratic Union have vowed to launch a voters' referendum to overturn it. Switzerland and Italy are among the last few major Western European nations without marriage equality.
December 1st also marks the passage of a South Australia bill to ban the so-called gay panic defense, the last down under state to do so. Defense attorneys have used it to get murder charges downgraded to manslaughter. The only proof required was the defendant's claim that a homosexual advance provoked them to murder. Tasmania became the first Australian state to outlaw the gay panic defense in 2003. Ironically, in 1975, South Australia was the first Australian state to decriminalize same-gender sex.
Germany's government will offer financial compensation to members of the military who are discriminated against because of their sexual orientation. The legislation calls for payment equivalent to about $4,000. Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer said that, "I know we can't make up for the personal injustice they suffered, but with a payment of a lump sum compensation, we want to send a signal of redress." The bill requires parliamentary approval, but Kramp-Karrenbauer is optimistic about its passage. She said that it's intended to restore the dignity of these people who wanted nothing other than to serve Germany. Proponents hope the bill will become law early in the coming year. A government study found systematic discrimination against gay people in the military from 1955 to 2000. That includes both West Germany's military and the armed forces of the reunited Germany starting in 1990. The Defense Ministry estimates that about 1,000 people will apply for the compensation.
Parents or guardians of transgender youth under the age of 16 in England and Wales must now get a court to order puberty blockers for their children. This according to a December 1st UK High Court ruling. That treatment prevents trans kids from going through puberty in the wrong gender. It's been hailed as life-saving in some cases. But a three-judge High Court panel decided that it is highly unlikely that a child of 13 or under would be competent to give consent. They said it was doubtful that 14 to 15-year-olds could weigh the long-term risks and consequences. For 16 and 17-year-olds, the judges admitted they might be presumed to be able to consent, but that doctors may want to get court orders for those patients too because the judges consider puberty blockers to be experimental treatment. The Tavistock and Portman National Health Service Foundation Trust operates England's only youth gender identity clinic. They promised to appeal that ruling to the Supreme Court, arguing that restricting access to desired medical treatment is likely to cause anxiety for patients and their families. The controversial issue of what might be the appropriate age to allow access to puberty blockers for trans children is being hotly debated elsewhere too, especially as more and more young people freely self-identify as transgender.
Among the names in the news these past 2 weeks, the Oscar-nominated 33-year-old actor who vaulted to stardom in the movie Juno is now Elliot Page. The Canadian native came out as lesbian in 2014. In a social media posting this week, Page wrote that, "I want to share with you that I am trans, my pronouns are he, they, and my name is Elliot." Page wrote about the horrific violence trans people suffer. He acknowledged his privilege and promised to do everything I can to change this world for the better. Page also had starring roles in the X-Men series and the mind-bending movie Inception. He currently stars in the Netflix series The Umbrella Academy and will continue playing the cisgender female character Vanya Hargreaves. Page's wife, choreographer Emma Portner, wrote on Instagram that she is so proud. Elliot's existence is a gift in and of itself.
The legacy of Amy Stevens lives on. Detroit's Harris Funeral Homes agreed this week to pay $250,000 to settle the lawsuit filed by their fired transgender employee. Stevens was one of the cases in which the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that federal civil rights laws ban workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Tragically, she died in June at the age of 59, just weeks before the decision. Harris Funeral Homes will pay $130,000 to Stevens' estate and $120,000 in legal costs.
Deb Price may not be a household name outside queer circles, but she was the first ever U.S. mainstream newspaper columnist as a proudly out gay person. Her column debuted in the Detroit News in 1992 and was increasingly republished in major papers across the country. Some of her columns were compiled into a best-selling book that included excerpts from correspondence she got from some of her readers. It was called "And Say Hi to Joyce." Price's wife, Joyce Murdoch, told the Bay Area Reporter that Price died on November 20th from a condition that gradually diminished her lung capacity. Price also worked at the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. She was working in Hong Kong at the South China Morning Post until she was hospitalized in September. She was 62. Tributes to Price poured in from around the world. Murdoch may have summed it up best in a Facebook post. Deb lived energetically, optimistically, bravely, and fully. Her 18 years as a groundbreaking gay columnist changed lives, healed families, and helped our nation progress toward being a more perfect union.
Notoriously homophobic Poland celebrates Frédéric Chopin as a native son, although he left Warsaw for Paris early in life and never returned. A two-hour program on Swiss public radio called Chopin's Men may have a clue why. His biographers portray him as a womanizer, but this program claims that the composer's homosexuality, or at least bisexuality, has been airbrushed from history. Swiss music journalist Moritz Weber used the COVID lockdown to review some of Chopin's letters and found a flood of declarations of love aimed at men. In one letter, Chopin refers to the womanizer rumors as a cloak for hidden feelings. Weber says, "The fact that Chopin had to hide part of his identity, as he himself writes in his letters, would have left a mark on his personality and his art. Music allowed him to express himself fully, because piano music has the advantage of not containing any words." As Chopin himself put it in one of his letters to a close male friend, "I confide in the piano the things that I sometimes want to say to you." Warsaw's largest airport is named for Chopin, as are parks, streets, and public buildings. Not surprisingly, a spokesperson for the Frédéric Chopin Institute belittled the notion that Chopin was anything but straight. They said, The way Chopin uses language is so musical and complicated. To translate all that from the original Polish is madness.
Finally, a proudly out LGBTQ band was playing musical history at this year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. It was a queer first in the world-famous parade's 96-year history. Organizers limited bands for the pandemic year event to those in the New York tri-state area. The Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps has been applying to participate in the parade for years. 2020 gave them the opening they needed. An estimated 20 million people watched the televised event. The band's artistic director, Marita Begley, told NBC New York that
there are families out there in Middle America and throughout the country that are going to see this, and it's going to give hope to young people who are questioning their sexuality, their gender.
Founding band member Joe Avina elaborated.
People will see that we're part of them and part of their lives and part of what they love.
And what song did the artistic director choose for the band to play as members proudly marched down Fifth Avenue? What else but ABBA's Dancing Queen?
That's News Wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Lesbians that lived long, lovely lives on the Rainbow Minute.
But first...
Dear Mama, I'm sorry it's taken me so long to write. Every time I try to write to you and Papa, I realize I'm not saying the things that are in my heart. That would be okay if I loved you any less than I do, but you are still my parents and I am still your child. I have friends who think I'm foolish to write this letter. I hope they're wrong. I hope their doubts are based on parents who loved and trusted them less than mine do.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. If you're going to San Francisco, you're gonna meet some gentle.
Armistead Maupin is known for his great stories about San Francisco's queer and quirky characters. The story of his own queer and quirky life may be even better, according to This Way Out Queer Life and Lit commentator Janet Mason.
There's something comforting about a good story. Logical Family, the memoir of Armistead Maupin, published in 2018 by HarperCollins, was especially comforting in that it contains a good bit of LGBTQ history that is being erased through assimilation, gentrification, and neglect. I listened to the audiobook version of the memoir, which was read by the author, a storyteller with a gentle southern drawl who can write and tell what is called a good yarn. The story starts in the American South, where the celebrated gay author was born to arch-conservative parents. Despite being conservative himself in his youth, he lands in San Francisco and writes his widely known series of books, Tales of the City, which started as a daily column in the San Francisco Chronicle. Tales is a series of 9 novels published in 1978 through 2014. The novels were converted into a television series and then a streaming series. Logical Family is a title that conveys the need for those in the LGBTQ community to find their chosen families. We learn about Maupin's childhood, his need to win the approval of his conservative father, his military service during the Vietnam War, his early career in journalism, which led him to San Francisco, where ultimately he led his openly gay life. We also meet his real-life maternal grandmother, a bit of a magical creature herself, who inspired his very magical character, the transgender landlady, Anna Madrigal, at the house on Barbary Lane where Tales takes place. To me, the most remarkable thing about this memoir, aside from the amount of important LGBTQ history that it contains, is that family is so important to Armistead, and that in many ways he created his chosen or logical family based on his family of origin. At the end of the book, there is a touching scene where the author's partner bonds with Armistead's dying father. Before the end of their visit, Armistead's father draws his son's partner aside and tells him, "You take care of that boy, you hear?" At the end of Logical Family, Armistead reads his letter to Mama, written as a coming out letter from one of his characters early on in the series when it was published in the San Francisco Chronicle. Unfortunately, the sentiments and letter to Mama still hold true today. Part of the often performed letter reads,
"No, Mama, I wasn't recruited. No seasoned homosexual ever served as my mentor. But you know what? I wish someone had. I wish someone older than me and wiser than the people in Orlando had taken me aside and said, 'You're all right, kid. You can grow up to be a doctor or a teacher just like anyone else. You're not crazy or sick or evil. You can succeed and be happy and find peace with friends, all kinds of friends, who don't give a damn who you go to bed with. Most of all, though, you can love and be loved without hating yourself for it.'"
I found Logical Family by Armistead Maupin, published by HarperCollins, to be not only a good read, but one that is essential in understanding our history. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
The election has shown that LGBTQ candidates, now electees, can be an example to the world, that queer people can be successful, that queer people deserve equality, that queer people are making a difference. For isolated, young LGBTQ people, this election can help their own struggle for acceptance and even self-acceptance.
We'll hear how election wins teach LGBTQ youth that they can live long, lovely lives after we hear about a few famous lesbians who did just that.
Lesbians that lived long, lovely lives, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Many lesbians throughout history have lived exceptionally long, full lives. Alice B. Toklas, Gertrude Stein's life partner and a cookbook author, lived to the age of 89. Expatriate poet Natalie Barney spent much of her life conferring with the prominent artists and writers at her salon in Paris. She lived age 95. Then there was Ethel Mary Punchin. Starting off as a teacher and actress, she then spent 60 years promoting cultural exchange between Australia and Japan. At the age of 105, she was chosen to be the honorary ambassador for Australia's 1988 Expo, since she was believed to be the only Australian who had attended the 1888 Expo. Her illustrious life ended the next year at the age of 106. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Janice Brown. And God died.
everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Leaders walk among us, and I hope they hear our call. Maybe it's a woman or a black man after all. Looking for a leader to bring our country home. Lead a rainbow of colors in a broken world gone wrong.
As they say, elections have consequences. And the recent U.S. elections had major consequences for LGBTQ youth, especially those who may be struggling with their identity. The Outcasting Overtime team explores why.
This is Outcasting Overtime, from Media for the Public Good, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Justin, an Outcasting youth participant. The November election is finally behind us. It's likely to be remembered for a lot of things. One of them is the number of LGBTQ people who were elected to high political office. Voters in Delaware elected their first transgender state senator. In Georgia, they elected their first black lesbian state senator. In Tennessee, they elected their first two openly gay members of the state legislature, one a Republican and the other a Democrat. And in Vermont, they elected their first transgender legislator. From New York, two gay men, one black and the other of mixed black and Latino heritage, are going to the U.S. House of Representatives. As LGBTQ youth and straight allies, we Outcasters are taking a moment to reflect on this. Being LGBTQ and young can be very difficult. We have friends for whom being LGBTQ is among the worst things that ever happened to them. Not because they're LGBTQ, but because they either fear or actually experience persecution for it. We often have to repress aspects of our LGBTQ identities in order to protect ourselves. The idea of repression is always going through the minds of many young LGBTQ people. To try not to stick out so that we don't feel targeted. To avoid situations that cause anxiety because of who we are. With that also comes the idea that some people look at us as if we don't deserve to be there. We have the burden of knowing that because of our identity, we can be silenced and some of our basic human rights can be denied to us. And this isn't just in our personal lives. We see LGBTQ people experiencing it throughout the world. Even with all of this, we're relatively lucky among LGBTQ youth because we live in the New York City area. We're certainly not saying that all young LGBTQ people around here have it easy. Some families here still refuse to accept their LGBTQ children, sometimes to the point of disowning them. Even now, being LGBTQ remains a leading cause of youth homelessness. But in general, the climate is more accepting. Many of our schools have GSAs, or gay-straight alliances, clubs where LGBTQ youth and straight allies gather in safe spaces and can create meaningful relationships and feel comfortable in our own identity. We talked about the importance of GSAs in the very first edition of Outcasting. You can hear it on our website, outcastingmedia.org. If we experience bullying in school, chances are generally good that if we report it to teachers or administrators, we'll find someone willing to listen and try to address the problem. If we feel uncomfortable telling our own parents, maybe we can talk to a friend's parents and get advice and support. In some schools, people who are not accepting of LGBTQ people are actually looked down upon. But in other areas of the United States, young LGBTQ people may be largely or completely unable to find support. They may have a hard time coming out to their friends and family, or maybe even coming out to themselves. If they do come out, they can be ostracized by an unwelcoming community. They often have to hide their LGBTQ identity for their own well-being, which carries huge psychological cost. There are many places where there are no gay-straight alliances, where it can be impossible to find an accepting adult, where coming out is unthinkable, where LGBTQ young people have to lie every day in order not to be found out, and where, if they are found out, they can lose everything. Their family, their home, their education, their financial security, their future prospects, even their lives, without being able to find anyone supportive. Some kill themselves. Being LGBTQ is a leading cause of teen suicide. Again, not because they're LGBTQ, but because they face a society that demonizes them and causes them to hate themselves. So why is this election so important to LGBTQ youth? On the day after Election Day, Sarah McBride of Delaware, the first transgender person ever elected as a state senator in the United States, said on Twitter, I hope tonight shows an LGBTQ kid that our democracy is big enough for them too. As a practical matter, the increased number of LGBTQ people elected to political office means that the government is becoming more diverse. As a result, more elected officials will hear LGBTQ voices. This is bound to result in greater acceptance of LGBTQ people among straight, cisgender lawmakers, and we hope a greater willingness among them to take LGBTQ perspectives into account when they're drafting laws. But perhaps even more importantly, this election has shown that as more and more people understand and accept LGBTQ people, they're willing to vote for them. Maybe some voters voted for these candidates in spite of the fact that they're LGBTQ. Maybe other voters simply didn't care that the candidates were LGBTQ, which is even better. The election has shown that LGBTQ candidates, now electees, can be an example to the world, that queer people can be successful, that queer people deserve equality, that queer people are making a difference. For all of us, it's a validation that we ourselves deserve acceptance and respect. But for isolated, young LGBTQ people, this election can help their own struggle for acceptance, and even self-acceptance, when their families and friends see LGBTQ people elected to public office, when they see that LGBTQ people can be professional and proudly out of the closet. Young, struggling people may not be able to come out to other people, but this election can help them realize that there is a life after high school and develop a plan to leave their toxic environment. If they're too indoctrinated with anti-LGBTQ feelings, they may resist this knowledge at first, but hopefully the public validation of these new LGBTQ electees will help them understand that what they've been taught was wrong. For them, this election can be a powerful beacon in their dark lives, giving them hope that if they can't find acceptance in their own communities, there's a bigger world that will accept them. A world in which they can become happy and productive people living fulfilling LGBTQ lives, something that some of them can't even imagine. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime from Outcasting Media, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Outcasting Media is produced by Media for the Public Good, based in New York. This piece was created with input from the Outcasting team, including Chris, Brian, Tim, Lil, and me, Justin. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and related content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Tanya Kane Perry, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Janet Mason, from Janice Brown, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Outcaster Justin, produced by Mark Sofos. Peter Schmalfuss, the Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps, Scott McKenzie and Neil Young performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors Paul Bannon and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, 2CHR Cessnock, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, y'all, and stay tuned.